Dun-dun-dun. Welcome to Tom Rhodes Radio, everybody. I have a treat for you today. Last month, I was in Los Angeles, sat down with my old friend, Jimmy Schubert. I've known him for many years. Before I had ever met him, I had heard about him. He was doing Ron Bennington's Disciples of Comedy tour. This was a long time ago. And we had a lot of mutual friends, and now I've known him for many years. He's one of my favorite people to hang out with. He always cracks me up. And I think as a comedian, he's a beast. He's from Philadelphia. He's Irish. His dad was a cop in Philly. How can that not be the perfect recipe for a funny human being? Jimmy Schubert is a funny human being and one of my favorite people on the planet. And if you don't know him, you're going to love him. You're going to love this conversation. And go see him live when he performs in your city. It's my pleasure to present to you now the one and only Mr. Jimmy Schubert. Jimmy Schubert, ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Schubert.
Tommy Rhodes in the house.
You are the one that came up with the nickname for me, Tommunism.
Tommunism. You know what the thing is? me and your buddy Lou Angel Wolf were talking, and he goes, he loves, because you travel the world like nobody I've ever met in my life. You are out there, you're like Johnny Appleseed, spreading your love biscuits, spreading your love biscuits out there. It's a special blend. You know, I call it Tommunism. It's not communism, it's Tommunism. It's communism with a laugh. You know, it's Tommunism. No, because you're...
Now, you just got back from China. Are you any closer to being a communist?
No, actually, that's the most capitalistic place I've ever been in my life. I thought I was walking into the hood, the frug, and the glue, and the hoist. You know, and these people go, you get anything if you get enough money. And I mean, it was really great. First off, the trip, it's like a 14-hour flight to Shanghai. And I had a four-hour layover, and then another two-hour flight to Beijing. So I get to Beijing, and that's where your buddy Des Bishop, who's from New York, who lives in Ireland. He's a big star in Ireland. He's doing a show. He's learning Chinese. He wants to do a complete stand-up show in Chinese. And when I was at the Bookworm in Beijing, they had a kid go up and do his entire set in Chinese. And the kid studies the classic comedy team duos of Chinese comedians, wow, which is really kind of like, it's like a way...
Like an American kid.
Yeah, but he has, and he's gone up and he does versions of that, but it's amazing how fluent some of these English speakers are in Chinese. It's amazing. You live there long enough, you know, you figure you would learn the language. It's the least you could do. And some of these guys, like Turner and Andy, are both... the guys that run the trip I was on are fluent. Dez is learning. He was pretty good. But
Did you see Dez perform in Chinese?
No, he performed in English. He performed in English.
Turner told me he's working. He took a job as a busboy in a restaurant, so he can try and learn even quicker.
Yeah, well, he's also going to university to learn Chinese, and they're doing a show. He's doing a show. He did it in Ireland where he learned Gaelic.
He learned Gaelic and performed.
And now this season is him trying to learn Chinese. And, you know, he has a guy come in where they do a month on, a month off, a month on, a month off. And then they're making a new show for Irish television. So it'll probably be a big hit. But it's kind of Beijing, is this.
So what did you think of Beijing?
I thought it was, it's interesting, man. There's just a lot of Chinese people. I mean, you hear about there's a lot of Chinese people. You don't know how many Chinese people till you get there. Every time I stuck my hand in my pocket, I was shaking hands with a Chinese guy. For every Chinese guy, there's nine Chinese guys.
And there's so many bicycles in Beijing.
Well, yeah, only a certain population owns cars. So that's all scooters and bikes and motorized rickshaws and regular rickshaws. I mean, and it's like they're just, you got to look three ways before you cross the street, you know, to make sure that, you know.
Did you go to the street where they have everything fried on a stick, like scorpion and snake? And
yeah. I was down there. Yeah. You get this little, you know, I went to the, they have these hutongs, this older housing for, and also I went to the Forbidden City, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I went there. Yeah. When I went there years ago, there was a Starbucks booth in the center, but they got rid of it.
Yeah, of course.
I read about it in the newspaper. I mean, I thought it was... you know, when I saw it, my first reaction was, oh, American capitalistic bullshit. And then it was December. My second thought was, oh, my God, it's freezing. I'd love a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good. Thank God for American capitalism. They love our special blend of imperialism we export. Chocolate, McDonald's, Hooters, and coffee.
Is there a Chinese Hooters?
There's a Chinese Hooter, but it's not like here. They're very flat-chested over there. You know, it's called Hoot. Give a hoot. Don't pollute. They're like a couple of raisins jetting out of their chest over there. It's not, the Chinese women are not well endowed.
One thing I thought about Beijing was the street vendors were hilarious. I thought the sense of humor of people that I encountered on the street, I thought they'd be all sad and gloomy. I thought there was an abundance of good humor.
Yeah, it's like anywhere else. They're curious about you. Like, you know, but I've been to Israel and Ireland and some of these other places I've been. I've always found the people to be a little warm and receptive to you know, very rarely did I encounter any kind of negativity. It was all like, hey, you know, the people that could talk to you in English would talk to you in English. And about American basketball, they're huge basketball fans in China, basketball fans, because the NBA sold their contracts to them for dirt cheap. So they're a huge basketball fan.
There are people in the north of China that are like, you know, 7 foot and taller. You know, in our stereotype in the States, we think they're tiny people, but there's giant people in the north of China.
Yeah, there's a I didn't get up to the north. I mean, I went up to Shanghai, I guess, was the furthest north I went, but Shanghai is a terrific city as well.
You like Shanghai better?
I like Shanghai better, yeah. It's my kind of city.
So tell me, what'd you like about it?
Well, it's just, well, you could see all the influence, all the French influence, all the British influence, because for a while, it was the oldest trading port in the world. Shanghai, as they like to refer to it, the whore of the Orient. And for good reason, because on the third floor of the Shanghai Hotel, you can get a little thing called tornado blowjob.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you elaborate?
Well, let's elaborate on the tornado blowjob. First off, you go to the third floor, and they walk in with these girls, and they'll have a number on them, and you pick the number you want, and then the girl takes you into another room where she picks the outfit you want her to wear, and then you go to a third room where you take your clothes off, you disrobe. And they lay you down and she gives you a massage. And then they get you turned over and they give you a massage in the front. Okay? And then there's these things, these bars that she gets up on. She turns herself up down and she wraps her legs up in these silk things and spins herself around up on the thing. And then she hangs up.
No way.
Yeah. And then she hangs upside down and puts your schwants in her mouth.
And then she unravels and spins around
you. And she lowers herself onto your cock.
No,
and as she comes lower, her self-esteem gets lower. And it's one of the most fantastic things I've ever seen in my life.
And you read about it in the guidebook.
Yeah, I read about it in the guidebook. So good.
So how much does something like that run, June?
About 600 US.
Really?
No, I didn't.
You had a girl spinning on a...
No, I'm just kidding. I didn't spend that kind of fucking money. Are you kidding me? I went there to make money, not spend money. But yeah, but there's you can get these kinds of things done. And it's not the guidebook you get at, you know, the local bookstore.
Right.
This is a guy, you'd have to go online to get this guidebook for perverts visiting China. No, it was actually crazy. I mean, like, you're walking down street Shanghai and, you know, in these little areas and these women would just come up to you. And let's kind of like grab your hand, and I'm going like I'm a little busy right now, but I mean it was crazy, man. We were at this place called Malone's, where the, like, you know, it's so funny because I did a pilot for Turner. Turner was doing this pilot for Chinese television, and I did the pilot with him. He asked me to be like a talk show guest, so I did it to see how Chinese television works. I've seen high school productions that were better than this thing. It took 6 hours, and during the day we're at this place called Malone's. During the day, it's like this English pub. So, but at night, they have a Filipino band playing, and all these Filipino girls go. And I said, boy, man, there's a lot of Filipino girls. And he goes, yeah, relax. They're not these kind of girls. I said, you know, some of them were men dressed as women that, you know, you'd have a tough time distinguishing if you had not, you know.
Wow.
So, but it's a hooker bar. It's like a kind of hooker bar. And I said, oh, well, that's okay. So they go, Malone's. It was, well, you know what's funny? Here's the weirdest thing. Dude, you talk about kismet. I'm in Greenville, Mississippi. I'm doing a charity golf function for my buddy Steve Azar, who's a country blues guy. And at one of his functions, I'm having dinner with this doctor. Like, the whole town helps out. They raise money for the St. Cecilia Foundation for that area and education and kids. And so it's a cool thing. And John Fox, the coach of the Denver Broncos, is there. And I get to perform it and do stand-up. I went with Gary Valentine and Jackie Flint. And one night I'm having dinner with this doctor, and his lady friend shows up, and I tell him I'm going to Beijing and Shanghai. She goes, oh, really? She goes, my son bid on this charity item, and it's a three-day stay at the Ritz-Carlton in downtown Shanghai for like 3 days, completely free. If you're going, it's going to expire at the end of the month, and you want to use it.
No way.
Yeah, so I said, well, give it to me. If I can use it, I'll use it. And sure enough, it worked out. I went and stayed there all three nights. I went and spent 2 nights at the Ritz-Carlton in Shanghai.
Wow.
In the French neighborhood, in the high-end neighborhood.
Wow.
You know, and even Des made this point. You know, the Chinese people that are very wealthy Chinese people, they're like the nouveau riche, are so, like, so new money. Like, you know, they'll have Louis Vuitton seat covers on their Mercedes Benz. You know what I mean? I mean, it's so, like, tacky. Like, you know, it's so, it's like, I got to have all the glitter and the glitz and all the, it's not like, you know, sometimes when you meet people that have, like, real wealth that they built, you know, guys will be in, like, sneakers and, like, you know, you wouldn't even know they had a ton of money.
Right.
They drive a beat-up pickup truck. Not over there. Everybody wants you to know they got money. I got Louis Vuitton everything. Louis Vuitton shoes. It's amazing. So the Nouveau Riche over there are very, very tacky with their new acquired wealth over there. It's kind of funny to see. You know, everybody's got to know that they got money. But it's incredible. I mean, we went to the Tai Chi, went to the gardens, the fish gardens.
Where, in Suzhou?
In Shanghai. And there's a place in there, but the path up to the Buddhist temple, it's zigzagged. And then you're like, why is that like zigzag? I mean, it's kind of cool. It goes, so no evil spirits can get in to the temple.
Because evil spirits only walk in a straight line.
Well, evil spirits have a tough time making a turn. They have a tough time cornering. So, but that's, they can't corner. The ghosts are a little clumsy in general. But they have this zigzag pathway leading into this Buddhist temple, which I thought was pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But, you know, it was, you know, it's just like you go to guys on bikes, but they got like these giant boxes. They're balancing on these bikes. And I go, it goes, yeah, over here in China, it's an SUV. But it was a guy on a bike with these big boxes. I don't even know how the hell he was doing it.
In Jakarta on scooters. You'll see like a family of five, like the dad and the mom and the three kids all balancing on a scooter. It's incredible.
It's like a circus act. Yeah. It's like a circus act. All they need is a high wire and a safety net, and that's something you see in a circus.
Did you see this in Shanghai? One thing that was really interesting, there was a park in Shanghai where all these old people go on the weekend, yeah, and they write the handwritten
They make their kids arrange marriages.
Or they're looking for a mate themselves, like, yeah. You know, and it'll say, like, I'm clean, I'm such and such age, I don't, you know, smoke or whatever.
Which is really tough to find that in China. People don't smoke.
Right. Or spit. They like to spit.
They spit.
But it was like real life Facebook. People, like, they'll do, like, a little profile on a piece of paper, and they'll tape it to the fence, and then they just stand there waiting for someone to talk to
them. I heard about it, but I didn't go see it. I was busy
doing it. I went, and they don't like if you take pictures.
Yeah, they don't like for you to take pictures. They don't like that. But I had my picture taken a couple times because we went down to the Bund, and then there's what would be like the New York Times Square of Shanghai, and you go in. There's a lot of touristy people, and when we were taking pictures, they were taking pictures of us because I guess they don't see a lot of tourists. You know, because you know, from some of the places that are deep inside, you know.
No, their fake passport they're working on.
Dude, we were up in Nanjing. I took a bullet train.
There's probably some action figures that look just like you.
Yeah, well, we took a bullet train to Nanjing, which was like the farthest, like from Shanghai. It was like a 2 or 2.5 hour 3 ride out to Nanjing, and on the way out. You know, I'm reading about Nanjing and the rape of Nanjing in like 1945. The Japanese imperialistic army kind of trudged on through.
Yeah, the Japanese were ruthless.
Ruthless, bro. Ruthless isn't the word. I mean, they cut babies not only in half, they cut them in quarters and thirds. I mean, they raped like 20,000, 80,000 women. They killed like 250,000, 300,000 people. They made people do horrible things. Buddhist monks, and they made them have sex with nuns. They made dads have sex with their daughters and brothers have sex with their sons. I mean,
really?
It was really, really horrible. You know, and it's not really well documented because everybody wanted you to forget about how brutal what the Japanese did to the Chinese. I mean, you read about that. It's nothing less than what they did in Germany with the Jews. I mean, I was reading this going, holy fuck, I've never heard about this. I couldn't believe I've never heard about it. And on the train ride out, I kept telling our promoters, looks like Jimmy Schubert's reporting in Nanjing. Looks like Nanjing's about to get raped again. No, I'm just kidding. Joking. No, but it was...
I thought it was Nanking. It's Nanjing.
Yeah, it's Nanjing. It's like Beijing, some Nanjing. Yeah, it's like they say Nanking, but that's how I refer to it online, Nanking. I guess like Nat King Cole, but it's like even Peking Duck is not Peking Duck. It's Beijing Duck, but they didn't know how to fucking pronounce it. So they just, you know, it's like Beijing and Nanjing. And, you know...
So what's the funniest thing that happened to you in China?
Funniest thing that happened to me in China?
I saw you in the ice cream truck.
Oh, the end of the
Turner
ice cream.
Sparks, yeah, Turner's the gig over.
Well,
there.
That was cool. That was like one of the funner things. Because when I was
Mr.
a kid,
Softy
man,
truck.
Dude, Mr. Softy was like mother's milk, bro. When I was like, I'm telling you, bro, when I was 8, 9, and 10, I was, hey, Mom, I got 50 cents, and you could hear music, dan, 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 you know, music yeah. to play. Except in our neighborhood, it was so tough. They played the theme from The Godfather. No, I'm kidding. It's a stupid fucking joke. But I was back home recently, and I heard the ice cream truck, and I ran out to get an ice cream cone. And it was just, it reminded me. But then when we were over there, we're coming into Suzhou, which is like the Venice of China, because they build all these underwater canals.
Yeah, and that's where the gardens are. That's why I thought.
That's where the gardens are, but also that architecture, that like those pagodas, those pagodas that you see, that's all that architecture is very specific to Suzhou. So I commandeered the Mr. Softy truck. And I was like, we're getting some, and I was serving at the thing. And over there, there's another guy. Talk about, you know, this is interesting. Talk about, the dude's got the Mr. Softy franchise. But there's another guy called Uncle Ben's Ice Cream. And the guy's parked right next to the frickin' Mr. Softy truck. I'm going, they stole the ice cream truck idea. And now they're parking right next to the Mr. Softy truck. I'm going, could you be any more unoriginal? And
I told Philadelphia, them, they'd get your ass kicked.
In Philadelphia, they'd find you with a fucking in a dumpster with an ice cream cone up your ass. Are you going to come take my neighborhood? This is my route. This is my route. But over in China, they don't. I mean, it was so like an unoriginal. It was such an unoriginal. So you're gonna steal the ice. And you're not even original enough to even come up with your own spot. Like, they stole the ice cream truck, and now they're parking right behind you. And I told Turner, he's about to get, like, 50 more trucks over there. And I said, you want to put 2 trucks to every 1 truck.
Yeah.
And just run them out. Just box them in.
Yeah.
Just box them in. Box them in. Give people choices. Just box the guy in and just crush him. And just, you know, slowly just cut off the air. Like, they're gonna, there's no line. If there's a line over there, there's no line on this side. You get double the effort. And before you know it, the guy's got 3 trucks. And next thing you know, he's out of business. He'll come up with his own route. But it's like, instead of, to him, he's an American businessman. He's like, frustrates him to no end, because it's probably the son of a prominent Chinese official, so they can do whatever they want over there. Wherever. But, you know, you're an American over there. It's just the way things are done. They didn't really get like this until about 15 years ago. I mean, my friend said he's walking down Shanghai, and there's a little lady, you know, pops and just fucking pulls up her skirt and, like, you know, drops a turd in the garden over there. And he goes, you got me again, Shanghai. Things you'd never see in America. You got me again. Or like people just holding their babies over to a fucking trash can while the kid shits.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but he says it happens. He goes, I was looking for it. Believe me, I would have taken a picture if I saw it.
And so
that would have went right up on Facebook. You know, that would have went right up on Facebook.
So they just copy everything, and you said that the Germans give them, like, technology from 3 years ago.
Well, no. Well, the interesting thing is, because I guess the Germans have been doing business with them for years, so they know you don't give them the latest technology because they'll steal it. I mean, that's what happened to Steve Jobs. It was a really – I mean, obviously, he went over there, and he got his stuff made for a lot cheaper than he could make it in America. They wouldn't be able to make it and sell it for as cheap as they do because it's made in China. But – one of the considerations is that the Chinese will then break down that technology and make an exact replica of the version that you have and start selling it. So you think you're getting an Apple product. You're not even getting an Apple product. In fact, they had a whole store there that was a complete ripoff of an Apple store. The people working there thought they were working an Apple store. Wrong again.
Wow.
You got me again, Shanghai. It's a complete freaking counterfeit. It's a complete counterfeit. Not only that, but they said you got to be careful with the nightclubs. They'll serve you fake booze. It's coming out of a bottle. Like, you know, they save the empties and they sell the bottles because the bottles and the glassware is what's tough to reciprocate over there. He said, so people will sell their empty bottles to these people and they'll put fake booze in them.
Wow.
Happened to me one night. I woke up with a fake hangover, Tom. Let me tell you something. You haven't lived till you woke up with a fake hangover.
I've been to China twice, and the pollution was unbelievable.
It's, dude, the air quality. You know the problem is? I mean, that's the problem, is you can't maintain that. I mean, that's going to be, I mean, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, it's not going to get better.
I mean, what's the point in having money if they're all going to die at 32 because the air is so polluted?
Well, dude, that's, they got themselves in a quandary. There's a lot of people over there. I mean, you know, there's a town that has 500 million people in it. And there's 45 towns that are bigger than that one. I mean, you think we're in the middle of nowhere, and they got buildings stacked 50 floors high, floors high, because they have to have housing for all these folks that live there. I mean, it's 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 interesting. It's but all this is new. I mean, it's only like recently. It's all 15 years that, you know, some of these. I mean, like, you know, you go back 20 years ago and you look at some of these places. Even the whole downtown Shanghai was there was nothing there. And Suzhou, all these buildings, nothing was there. I mean, they've built up because they've had to. They've had no choice. And some of these cities are, you know, Shanghai and Beijing are real international cities. People go there, do a lot of business there. I mean, it's, you know, but yeah, but to make your point earlier, the Germans don't give them the iPhone 5. When the iPhone 5 comes out, they let them have the iPhone 3S, knowing full well that they're going to mass produce it, distribute it. So they're giving them technology that's 4 or 5 years old. I mean, the Germans do very well over there because they know how to do business. You know, they got the number, you know what I mean? Is that your Battle Saints bracelet, bro?
I got that in Rome last year.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. I got one of those. Nice. Yeah, absolutely.
It costs like €1.
Yeah, €1, bro. Why not?
So how do you like this traveling? I'm really proud of you for doing these world adventures.
I've had a couple this year. I went to Israel.
Yeah, I want to hear all about it.
Well, Israel, and it was going, like, just, this was back in November. And, man, Hamas, and they were trading missiles. You know what I mean? They were firing missiles, and it was like 9 days out from my trip.
Wow!
And I stopped in Philly to have Thanksgiving with my family. And
say goodbye.
It was just in case.
just in case.
Listen, I love you guys, and hey, you're awful affectionate this week, Jimmy. Why? I'm going to Israel. That's why. But while I'm sitting there having lunch with my parents, you know, a bus gets blown up in downtown Tel Aviv. So my parents are just sitting there eating. My dad's monitors the Drudge Report. You know, he's just. What's going on, you know? So he's all like, he ain't saying nothing because I'm going anyway. I was going for like a religious pilgrimage. I wanted to go do all the stuff. I want to go to Jerusalem. I want to do the Stations of the Cross. I was going for that kind of thing. So for me, I know people think I'm a troglodyte, but, you know, I wanted to go see and touch it. I mean, read about it for years and see that. And I got to tell you, man, I was blown away. I mean, we were staying at, right on Topsail Beach at Herod's Hotel, downtown Tel Aviv, right on the beach. I mean, it was amazing. The Israeli breakfast was like the highlight of the trip. Every morning you get up and you go down to the basement and they lay out this Israeli breakfast. And if you want, I got a video of it. I could give it to you. You can post it up there.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's just, it's amazing. I mean, they have a whole section of cheeses and morning fishes and then yogurts. And it goes on and on. And there's a whole bread counter with cinnamon buns. And there's a guy cooking omelets and fresh pizza. And anything you could ever want. We would sit down there. We would all get up at 6:30 in the morning. And comedians getting up at 6:30 in the morning. Once you had this Israeli breakfast, you're going, I'm going down there. I'm going to sit for about an hour and a half. I'm going to nosh for about an hour and a half. Yeah. I'm going to have some of the, I'm going to have a little bagel with a little cream cheese, a little salmon, as they call it in Israel, pink gold. Put a little salmon on my bagel and sit there and eat. And I was with Dwight Slade and Butch Bradley and Avi Lieberman. And those guys were the greatest. I mean, we would sit there and tell stories and laugh and crack each other up in the morning. And then we would fill up. And then we would, you know, I didn't have to eat until like at night. And, you know, we had a couple nights off. We did shows in Bet Shemesh. And we did a couple shows in Jerusalem. We did Tel Aviv. I mean, they were great. And they were all sold out. I mean, we're doing it for the comedy for Kobe Foundation.
And tell me the story behind that. That foundation is really cool.
Well, Rabbi Sherry and Seth run this charity, and it's for families that have lost victims to terror. And they realize their own kids have become withdrawn because they lost their son to... And the mom wrote a book called Blessings of a Broken Heart, which I just started reading. But it's, you know, they talk about that and they just do incredible work over there and they raise good money and they help a lot of people. And, you know, Tom, you know this, every once in a while you get a chance to do something good with your art and to go over there and get to have a life experience, but also to help other people raise awareness and consciousness for this. It's kind of cool. And, you know, I don't know if you've done any shows for the military, the troops. I'm sure you have. It's the same kind of feeling. I think you get more out of it than they do, even though you're getting to have this amazing life experience and see the world. And, I mean, you know, dude, again, we went to, you know, we had one night off in Tel Aviv, and me, Butch, and Dwight went to have dinner and went to Benny Yehuda Street, which is a cool little street with these cafes, but they're blaring this jazz. And it's like 1940s. It's like Monica Zetterlund and the Bill Evans Trio. But, you know, this music just puts you... I felt like it was in like... You know, I felt like it was like 1975. It just had this vibe to it. And we had a couple glasses of wine. The guy brings out the rest of the bottle and goes, hey, you can finish it. And it was just cool, man. It was just cool. I mean, you know...
I heard women in Tel Aviv are stunning.
They're stunning. They're stunning. And there's a little place called the Babushka Club. And again, you won't find in your guidebooks. But it's
the
a place,
Babushka Club.
The Babushka Club. It's a place where you can drop a lot of American money. But again, you know, it was, I heard about it. I heard about the Babushka Club.
Read it in the guidebook.
Read it in the guidebook. But it was just cool, man. It was cool. The shows were great. It was a lot of fun. And we would all go over and do like 20 minutes and then we come out and do a question and answer period. But you know what I find, what I really like is that when you travel abroad to do these shows, how appreciative the audiences are. Unlike America, where they seem to have taken it for granted. You know, now you're just soggy soggy the dunk tank clown. You're like a clown in a plain clothes division. You know, it's not. But over there, I think they appreciate it a little more because you had to travel all that way to get there to do it. So I think they're very polite and they're very appreciative, and they all wait to shake hands with you and say thank you for coming out. And it's like, oh, I was in China, dude. There was this kid, this Mexican kid. He was over there doing a 3-month intern at a law firm in Wuxi. He goes, I've been here for 3 days and I'm so homesick, and I came to this bar and I watched your show, and it just made my day, man. I mean,
yeah, people in over there are just starving for entertainment.
Well, it's anything American. I mean, it's anything to do. There's nothing for them to do, so they go to these Irish pubs. There's Irish pubs everywhere.
All over the world.
All over. Like
there's a kit you send away for. It's got a picture of James Joyce, Oscar Wilde, and Guinness with a toucan on it.
Finnegan's Wake. And they're all named after James Joyce novels. Finnegan's Wake. The James Joyce. Your buddy Des took me to a place in Beijing called the James Joyce. And we did a show at the Bookworm, which is kind of cool, which is not too far. But then we did a show, Tuesday in Nanjing. We did the Finnegan's Wake. I mean, you know, and then we did a Red Lion in Wuxi, and we did that. And then we did the Bookworm, it was in Suzhou, which was a cool place. And then we went down to Shanghai for the weekend. And it was just, you know, it's outstanding. You get to see China the way, you know, I realize how lucky I am. I mean, you do this all the time, and you live your life like that, which I find amazing. And I've done like 3 trips this year that were kind of international. I did Israel, I did Mexico for our friend Dan Schlissel and Stand Up Records. They do this. And again, that, you know, nobody gets, you fly down there, they provide you a place to stay, but you get to do these shows all over this little kind of village. And these people, again, are so appreciative to come down there, but they raise money and awareness for the Montessori school for the Mayan kids, because if these kids get a traditional Montessori education, then it's the difference between them having a pretty good life and living in complete and abject poverty. And even in Acomel, if you go over the bridge and you see, it's the conditions down there are ridiculously horrible. So it was nice to kind of, again, be able to do something cool and also have a life experience, you know? Trade off the life experience for the paycheck, but, you know, you have a good time doing it.
I'm trying to eat healthy. That's tough to eat healthy. I was at this place called Hugo's for breakfast the other day. They had a thing on a menu called a protein scramble. In my head, I'm going, that just sounds healthy. And I read the ingredients. Basically, it was an egg omelet with chicken meat in it. Yeah, a chicken omelet. Which is wrong. You don't take the eggs out of the chicken and then cook the chicken and put it in the eggs. That's too much chicken. Who the hell's back there cooking? Some kind of chicken serial killer? Huh? Who's working the grill? The Barnyard Strangler people? That's an omelet that spans 2 generations of chicken. That's not breakfast. That's a vendetta. Who's ordering breakfast? Tony Soprano? Listen. I want your chicken dead. I want his family dead. I want his unborn babies dead. I want 8 chickens coming back at me after I ate my breakfast. That's not right. You know what that's like? That's like taking your hamburger and dipping it into your milk. Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't do it. It's not kosher. You know, literally. When I wrote the joke, I meant it wasn't kosher in the slang definition of the word kosher. But a few weeks ago, I was doing a gig at a kibbutz, and it turns out, quite literally, it's not kosher. I mean, I like chicken. I just don't like it in eggs. That's the creepy part. I like food that moved at one point. God made animals slow enough to catch. He obviously intended for us to eat them. Besides that, what's the fun in hunting a vegetable? Anybody could sneak up on a carrot. I don't even trust vegetables because I get the nutrients from the dirt. Yeah? Would you eat dirt? No. Then why eat the middleman? That's what I'm saying. Some of that stuff's not even food. Celery? That's not food. That's dental floss trapped inside a carbohydrate. You know, I was reading about celery. Celery's actually dangerous. I know it looks harmless, but it's classified as a negative calorie food. There are 2 calories in 1 stick of celery, but if you eat it, it takes your body 10 calories to process. You could kill yourself eating celery if that's all you ate. I mean, it would take a long time, but you could do it. But relax, lady. She's staring at me like she's from the National Celery Growers Association. I didn't come here to badmouth celery. That's not why I'm here. And in all fairness, celery does have one good use, according to Peter North, the porno star. Yeah, some of you are familiar with his work. Peter North is a male porno star who's known for the amount of fluid that comes out during climax. It's quite substantial and pretty impressive. And he does it on a consistent basis. And they finally asked him, Peter, what's your secret? He said, I eat lots and lots of celery. It's a water-based vegetable that acts as a natural Viagra. It just fills me up. I don't even have a joke for that. I'm just passing along the information. You put that on the shopping list for those special occasions. Birthdays, anniversaries. You need to hit the money shot. You stop off at the produce section. That stuff will be coming out like silly string.
Before you went to Israel, you know, you called me and you go, hey, bro, I'm going to Israel. You ever been there? And I was like, no, you're going to have to write the guidebook on this one.
Yeah.
And so while you were over there, you know, I follow you on Twitter and we're friends on Facebook and stuff. I'm looking at your postings. And then there was some link that led me to a review of one of the shows. And like they commented on like something real minor. I don't think it was you. It was someone else that maybe had said damn or something.
I said shit twice.
Maybe it was that. And then I realized that you, for this tour, and I spoke with Avi Lieberman, who books it, you got to be squeaky clean.
Well, you got to be.
And especially in Jerusalem. So they can handle terror and buses being blown up, but they can't handle four-letter words.
Well, listen, like I said, it's like 1975. And really, man, it's 1975 over there. It's just a much simpler time. These people are good. It's all about the mishpucha. It's all about family. Some of the, they have large families over there. They have traditionally large families. I mean, not like the Haredi. Like, it's so funny. The Haredis are the black hatters. They wear the long trench coats. They got the black hat. They got the payas and the tassels and the world curly stuff hanging down off the side. The sideburns,
the squiggly sideburns.
So, so they're called Haredis, and I was doing a joke, and he goes, "You should change the reference on that." And that would make me feel as uncomfortable as a Haredi at a job interview, because the Haredi over there in Israel, if you dedicate your life to study, the government takes care of you. Well, obviously, they got a word to this, and then you know they all kind of exploited it, going, "We're all studying the Torah and the Homish book, and don't give me Spilkes." So they dedicate their life to study, and so they don't get to work. But it's a very strong, powerful lobby over there. They have 15 kids apiece. They have 15 kids. I mean, that's like it's a small family for the Haredis. And their kids don't have to serve in the military. Like all the other families' kids have to do a 2-year stint in the military.
Wow.
So he goes, "You should just say, that makes me feel as uncomfortable as a Haredi at a job interview." And I kept going, "Haredi."
and no one would laugh. And I was looking over, what is wrong? He goes, it's Haredi. I said, hey, Rady, hey, Rady. Like a Chinese Jerry Lewis, hey, Rady, hey, Rady. And he goes, and then in my head, I'm walking around and convinced myself to remember it. There's a story about a man named Schmerl who had 15 kids of his own. He met a girl named Mindel, and that's how they became the Haredi Bunch. Oi, the homish booker. No one has to work, and we live off the government, and no one has to serve in the military. Oi, the Haredi Bunch. Oi, the... And then, which turns into a bit on stage, and which turns into a bit on stage, but then they're going nuts, going, how's this Irish Catholic kid from Philly know about the Haredis and all this other stuff? But they loved it. They loved the effort, you know? The Haredi Bunch. But when you go over there, you know, like anywhere you travel, and I know you do this, you immediately go over there, you find out what's going on locally, you try to assimilate into the culture and find out what's happening, so you can make fun of it.
Right.
So there could be like 10 minutes of just material just arriving in a destination.
On your observations that you have, but that's a really insightful observation.
Well, only because I screwed it up. I had to trick myself, and then I just let that thought come out on stage, right. And they went nuts for it, and I was doing it the rest of the tour.
So you killed over there.
We did okay. Yeah, it was good. It was good. I had to make a few adjustments. Obviously, I'm not the cleanest guy either, Tom. I mean, I'm...
You're a beast. I love you, Jimmy. Yeah. I mean, you're one of the few people that cracks me up in real life. Yeah. You are funny on and off.
Thank stage. You, brother. Feelings mutual. You know, we got a... but yeah, so it was like... It's tough. The tricky part is that you're right. And you'll find... I mean, anywhere that you do these shows, it's better to be... Look, I could be... I don't have... You know, it's more of a challenge to be kind of figure out a way to complete the task without being filthy and figure right. out a way to do it. It's, you know, it occupies most of my day when you walk around writing down ideas and coming up with stuff.
Right.
You know, you're trying to figure out a clean way to do it. And it's just a great... You know, it's like anything else. I mean, I could be completely filthy. Hey, look, it's so funny. I was doing this gig, and it was in Houston, and the guy's name... Shoot, he's an older cat. He does stand up himself. You got to know the cat. Older dude. Anyway.
Jimmy Huggins?
No. The guy, he's an older cat. He opened the...
Jimmy Pineapple?
No. Billy Gardell knows him. He's an older guy. Anyway, Billy got me the gig down there, and I got the guy never came in to see my show. He goes, I'm never...
Oh, yeah, Don. Yeah, he doesn't have the...
Don Lern.
He doesn't have the gig anymore.
No, he doesn't have the gig, but Don Lern's sitting there. That's who it was, and he's great. Don's great, like old school guy, and he goes, I go, you're not interested in seeing my show and see how I do? You know, because Billy recommended me, and he hadn't been in the showroom one
right.
time. Or I didn't see him. He goes, I'm not worried about you, kid. You could close a funeral of a black biker gang if the Klan showed up. which I want to put in my press kit. I've never heard anybody say, he could close the funeral of a black biker gang member if the Klan showed up. I'm not worried about you. But it was a great...
That's the truth. And here is some good advice for any young comedians listening. When I was a young comedian... sometimes I would get off if it was a set I felt bad about, and I'd like bemoan about it to whoever would be around. And when the manager or the owner of the club asked me how your set went, and I was like, you know, it could have been better. Went to the toilet in the middle, something like that. I'm a real young comedian. And this headliner scolded me afterwards. He goes, after the manager owner left, he goes, you never do that. When a manager or club owner asks you how the show went, you go, great. Because there's a good chance he wasn't even in the room.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I actually watched a guy do that at the Comedy Store one night. And they used to call this guy Dude Dangerfield Danny Stone. And he looked like Roddy Dangerfield's illegitimate kid. And the only thing he could do was fucking the Roddy Dangerfield impression because he looked so much like the guy. I mean, there's a little thing. How do you make Danny Stone unfunny? You put a microphone in his hand. Because he could only do Roddy Dangerfield. And I watched him one night. I was standing and watching him. And he comes out and he goes, hey, Danny, how were they? He goes, you see the set? He goes, no. He goes, they were terrific. And then he walks down 10 minutes. The guy goes, hey, Danny, how are they? He goes, you see the set? He goes, yeah, I caught a couple minutes. He goes, yeah, they were a little off. Inside 10 feet, the guy went to killing to like, you know, having like, just an okay set. But it was just funny.
Who were some of the worst acts you've ever seen? You don't have to name names, but like any bizarre.
You know, he's bizarre. I wouldn't say he's unfunny because I love the insanity of it. Lenny Schultz.
Oh, yeah. Lenny was a little...
More pigs! More shit, Lenny! I mean, the guy was completely out of his fucking mind. He should have been... Someone should have 551'd him.
you know, or 550 to him, whatever that fucking code is for putting somebody in a mental institution. But it was fucking hilarious to watch. I mean, he was hilarious. I mean, just out of his fucking batshit crazy. And he's been around. He's like a high school, New York City high school gym teacher. And I've hung out with him down in Florida with Kevin James and Gary Valentine.
He used to
and
go
Rock
down
Rubin.
To Florida when I was starting out.
And dude, he would just do the craziest, like, Lenny, and they would just encourage him. And he was fucking certifiably crazy. Hilarious, but certifiably nuts.
Yeah. Now back to Israel. So what was your impression? Were you enlightened? Did you?
Well,
let me
tell you something. Here's the thing, and this is why you realize Israel, they grow frickin' bananas in Israel. You know, pineapples, some of the most colorful fruits I've ever seen. They have this technology that's basically turned that desert into a very productive look, and they've done it in record time. I mean, it didn't even become a state till 1967. I mean, but what they've done in a very short amount of time is, you know, and they've this technology to grow food. They've given it to the Jordanians. They've given it to Hamas. You know, but the Hamas came in and smashed all the freaking greenhouses. The Jews built it. The Jews built it. And they brought them, you're idiots. You just got this technology was in place for you to grow your own food. And they ruined it because the Israelis built it. But I mean, all the stuff I had there was great. The Israeli wine is great. The food, the hospitality, everybody was great. I mean, I was not like what I expected at all, nor was I ever in danger. Did I feel like I was in danger? I mean, we ran in bikes and rode them down the boardwalk, and me and Butch stopped and had a 2-martini lunch with a little bit of hummus. And and we drove back, and it was great. I felt like I was in Wildwood, New Jersey. You know what I mean?
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like. I was in Wildwood, New Jersey, and you know, and Israel is about as big as New Jersey. So, but we were right on the Mediterranean. It was cool, man. I got to tell you, I really dug it. That was one of those trips. I would go back again in a second. I had the best time. And here's what happened: the dude from the newspaper calls me, and I'm in Philly. And the time's different, like they're 12 hours in. So the dude calls me up 2 o'clock in the morning. I was just out with some guys I grew up with, and we were knocking back a few back. And he goes, hey, aren't you a little afraid? I said, I grew up in Philadelphia, all right? I got 6 brothers. I could get stabbed in my own house, all right? I'm not worried about Hamas. You know, come on, right? You know, and we're on this tangent. And about the second day we're there, fucking Avi Lieberman calls me and Butch Bradley call me fucking screaming. They're laughing so hard, they're fucking crying. They're like, you gotta get down here. You gotta get down here. Have you read the newspaper article? I go, no, what? I could have forgot about it. He goes, I ain't gonna let some goddamn filthy savage ruin my trip. I'm going over there for a religious pilgrimage.
You're not gonna let some goddamn filthy savage ruin your trip. You must have come out to a standing ovation every night.
I did, it was great. I was like a fucking national hero. These fucking assholes want to drag everybody back to the 12th century, and we're just trying to have some fucking, we're just trying to have a good time over here. And they loved it. They really did. I mean, that was like, that kind of really got like a little attention. And I was actually nervous. I was going, holy shit, man. Maybe they may sound like a Hamas double agent in here. If I could take, oh, we'll fix that. Yeah, like a comedian even pulls up on their register. You know, but every night, right next to the United Nations Embassy, is a place called Mike's Place. And that's where we would go. Like when we got back in the hotel, we would go down to Mike's Place, which is run by a couple guys from Jersey. Who Butch Bradley knows everybody, but we would go in there and we just had the best time there, and those guys were great. Plus, we're right next to the American Embassy. You know, any shit goes down, he's like, hey, I'm one of you guys. But we were in there with like 6 spooks one night. I shouldn't even say this, but like these guys, they wanted to come see a show, but they didn't want to give us their names. Yeah, no, like
what do you mean spooks?
Like CIA guys. I mean, these guys were like, yeah, no. No. I'm not Paula Deen, Tommy. All right, settle down.
I couldn't let that slip.
No, CIA spooks, Tommy. You know, they were, sorry. I mean, it's really, but they were like, you know, these guys were like, they wanted to come to our show, but they wouldn't give us their names. Hey, yeah, they told us all the places where I go, yeah, we were in Afghanistan. Yeah, us too. All right. We'd like, you know, but all the places, like, you know, Butch had done a lot of military tours, so we knew. But I mean, a lot of those guys, they were just like, you knew these guys, there was something about them, and they were all hanging out, and they were all kind of, you know, very cool. They were cool to talk to. Me and Butch went up and did like 5 minutes because I had an open mic at Mike's place, like music and stuff. So Butch went up and did some time, and I went up and did some time, and then they were like our best buddies. But it was kind of cool.
Awesome, man. So how has all this world travel expanded your worldview?
That's a great question. I can't believe, like, you know, I didn't think China would be like it would. I didn't think Israel would be like it would. And then you go there and it's a whole different thing. Like you thought, you know, Tel Aviv is probably the most, kind of liberal of the cities we were in. You know, a lot, you know, these people are just like, you know, they're just trying to make life better for them and their kids. You know, they're trying to, you know, they're very simple, you know, but very family oriented, religious people. And there's, you know, and you see, like, it's interesting. I mean, they have this little, they're surrounded by people who want them all dead, you know. Yeah. So it's an interesting life. And like you said, they have to deal with stuff like, you know, bombs and missile attacks and all like that. And the people in the South have it much tougher. But, you know, like kids that are like trying to sleep and they wet the bed because every night they hear the bomb thing and they have to run out. I mean, it's you know, it's a tough way to I was surprised at how many Americans actually go over there and live. There's like 100,000 Americans that live in Israel because, you know, that they can go back and live there. And it just seems like a kind of a simpler place. It seems like, you know what it seemed like? It seemed like, when I say it seemed like 1975, I mean, it seemed like 1975 in all the most innocent ways and cool ways. Like when, you know, when I was a kid, we thought life would be like that. I mean, and aside from the bombing and stuff, it's very simple, and they don't have any of the problems that we have. I mean, we're a much bigger country anyway, but it just seems like they all look out for one another. It's this real kind of, it's a whole, you know, it is all for one, one for all, kind of all on thing. And in this country, we have all these televisions that have all these, you know, cable proponents that actually try to drive a wedge between people and stuff. And what you realize, you know, united we stand as a people. I mean, obviously, you know, there's extremists and extremist views. I just think the overall goal, you know, I look back and I realize how our democracy has been wrestled away from the American people. The corporations have wrestled it away and have more say than the people do.
Right.
And in order for that to change, I think people have to kind of really, I mean, here's what I realize, is that we all live in this giant human ecosphere called Earth. And what hurts you hurts me. What hurts them hurts me. What hurts this guy hurts me. We're all kind of in this together. But everybody wants to think that we're better or we're different or we want this and you can't have that. And it's like, who cares, man? Who really cares? I mean, it's almost like a distraction so you don't pay attention to really the wholesale greed that's taking place at the upper echelons of our society and even our political process. It's so... Because you realize, and I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, but you realize that by the time all the carefully crafted communications, the speeches, the commercials, the amounts of money that exchange place, the handshakes, the secret handshakes, you realize nobody of any substance is going to make it through the mire.
Right.
So, but I didn't, I just...
A two-party system that produces not that different of candidates.
Yeah, exactly.
The parties are, I mean, there's only a few hot-button issues that really divide them in the end.
Yeah, yeah, and the funny thing is so I thought that, you know, and I didn't really get into the Israeli politics, but it just seemed like the general consensus of those people were kind of, it really was, everybody was looking out for each other, and it was a big group effort, and I kind of got that vibe. And then in China... you know, China, it could be the most capitalistic communist place I've ever been in my life. I mean, they're just getting the hang of it. See, it's funny because you did a special about Vietnam. And the funny thing is, as soon as we left Vietnam, it became a democracy. It became a capitalist society because they were busy trying to make life better for them.
It's still communist, but they're trying to emulate China for sure.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is, I mean, you know, and people I've talked to that have gone on vacation in Cambodia and some of these places that have really horrible reputation, he said it's the best vacation I ever had.
They go everything's a nickel. Yeah. I mean, Cambodia. I went to Cambodia, dirt poor.
Yeah,
dirt poor. And then Vietnam doesn't have the commerce. China's exploding with. I went there like 15 years ago, and then I've been there twice since then, and you big visible change in from abject poverty to seeing at least half the people wearing decent clothes and driving cars.
Yeah, I was, and I was amazed at the culture. I think the Chinese women are just absolutely stunningly beautiful, and they dress real nice. I mean, they dress real nice in Shanghai. I mean, you could see they have a very unique style. It's really kind of it's world class. You know, it's so funny because they like in this country in America, girls dress slutty. And they think it's sexy.
Right.
And well, no, it's slutty.
Right.
You know, over there, they dress very sexy. And they look sexy. They just don't know how to be sexy. At least according to the hookers I had. Cut! I'm kidding. I'm just joking. No, but that would seem to be the general consensus. Because, you know, it's why there's a... It's like, you know, what happened is they chased all the artistry out of China, and they all left and went to Taiwan. All the artistry, all the music, all the writers, everything were chased out. So now they have to import the Filipino bands and the Filipino music, and you can see its influence. It's like a generation removed. It's going to take them a generation for this kind of thing to catch up and for them to have that element of artistic, creative people that they got rid of at one point.
I've traveled all over Asia, and one thing you see all over Asia is it's predominantly Filipino bands, but there's a lot of... it's over 90%.
It's not just Filipino the bands either, Tommy.
But the thing, right? But you will see a Filipino band in Asia, just putting their heart into it. I mean, just like putting on spellbinding performances every night. I mean, that's, you know, you got to be a star where you're at. Who knows if they're ever going to get to Hollywood? But, you know, as a performer, you think, you know, you're not feeling it. Fuck that. These Filipino bands.
Well, look at where they come from. Well, look at where they come from, which is a great lesson in artistry. I mean, you know, these guys are out there doing it every night. They don't care. I mean, for them, it's like, you know, I go in the Philippines, I live in a glass, grass hut. Out here, I'm a fucking superstar.
Don't stop believing.
Plus, where else are you going to hear those 80 songs live like that?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know,
Journey would never be that good.
Yeah. No, I did see that. I did see a Filipino bar there. And then there was at the Ritz-Carlton, a little joint called Malone's right around the corner.
You mentioned Malone's earlier.
Yeah, I did. But I was there. We were there.
Now, whenever you see a regular Irish bar called Malone's, you're going to get a boner.
Hey, bro. I didn't really partake. I talk a good game, but there's no way I'm coming back with hoof and foot disease because I got involved with the wrong person. Yeah, I'm not gonna play that game.
Can you explain this to me? You've told me this before. You told me you were a conservative Republican from the waist up.
No. No. Tom, I've changed that now. Now I'm a Hollywood independent. And people say, what does that mean? I say, that means I'm a Republican who wants to make a living in show business. No. And I'm not even that. I'm not, you know, the thing is, I said, it was so funny. Here's the story. My friend was getting ready to sleep in his car next to the dumpster behind this place called the Oyster Bar. Okay, and I'm driving back home, and he goes, what are you doing? He goes, I'm in between apartments. I got to wait 5 days to get my thing, so I'm going to sleep in my car next to the dumpster. And there's a kid named Warren Durso.
I know Warren.
Yeah, you know Warren, of course, right. So I said, no, you're not. I said, no, I got a couch, okay? So no friend of mine is going to sleep in his car next to a dumpster behind a bar as long as I have a couch, okay? You'll stay at my place tonight if you need me tomorrow, and then you'll figure out someplace else Thursday and Friday, but you're not sleeping in your freaking car. So meet me in my house. I'll be there in about 15 minutes. So I get back, and I'm watching. The Democratic National Convention's on. And I'm just watching this, and it's just grating on my last nerve. Not because anything, because I just think they're all full of shit. You know, I just think everybody's full of shit. And he goes, and it comes in, and he's talking to another friend of ours, Billy Gardell. And Billy says, he hands me a phone, Shuby, thanks for taking care of him. You know, I'm married with a kid. I can't take, you know, I said, no problem. I said, you see this? You watch this Democratic rant in the National Convention, and he starts, and he believes this horseshit, and he goes, and at the time, I had been dating three women. I was dating a Korean girl, I was dating a Mexican girl, and I was dating a black girl simultaneously. I had this three dates. I was dating, and he goes, and I went, I just went over to the Democratic National Convention, and he goes, really, Schubert? Really? He goes, I got news for you, brother. You are a Democrat. You're letting a Jew sleep on your couch. You're sleeping with a Mexican girl, a black girl, and an Asian girl. You are a Democrat. I said, only from the waist down. From the neck up, I'm a conservative Republican. Anyway, that was the joke, and I just thought it was kind of funny.
Hilarious, Hollywood Independent. That's a beautiful story. I wanted you to give me the details.
No, but that's what it was. And my friend,
I have so many inside jokes between each other with the Tommyism.
Yeah. Well, it's just, and you also know the parties involved. You know, Warren needed a place. And usually, you would take care of the guy, but you know, Billy said I can't because I got a wife and kid, and I'm going, well, I got to take, you know, I'm not going to let the guy sleep.
Durso did stand up in Orlando years ago, and
he's still doing stand up. I don't know what he is. Did you see that article he had written about by the ugliest man on the planet? Oh, it was in Esquire magazine. It was called Ugly, and it was a picture of him naked with his hands over his junk.
Wow.
Yeah. So they wrote this whole story about him. They did this expose on him, and it was hilarious. I mean, it was just like, you know, quite frankly, you know, Durso could be you've seen him. Like, I've been out of bars, and the guy's like, you know, he's like, I go, he walks around like he doesn't own a mirror. Either that or he's got a circus funhouse mirror and he looks normal in it. I don't know how, but the guy comes up and you'd be sitting there talking to a girl and he just kind of comes in and tries to cock block. You go, really, Durso? Really? Honey, on what fucking alternate universe do you fucking exist in that you think this is ever going to fucking happen? But anyway, but you know, sorry. But
that's beautiful. Yeah. What is the greatest advice you've ever been given as a comedian?
Always work to the top of your intelligence. Always work to the top of your intelligence.
Good one.
Yeah.
That's one of the best I've gotten to the answers.
Yeah, always work to the top of your intelligence, and your audience will find you. Or try, you know, always, you know, I heard a story between, I think it was Seinfeld and Letterman. They were on the thing. And I guess those two are, like, pretty good friends. But he goes, you know, I'd rather fail doing something I wanted to do than be successful doing something I didn't want to do. You know what I mean?
We've become a very predatory culture. You can't even fire people today. You fire them, they come back and fire at you. You know what I mean? You let them go, they come back with an arsenal to make Charlton Heston jealous, and they shoot everybody that didn't say hi that one Tuesday back in 1999. Wipe out half your workforce. Well, you don't kill people when you get fired. You steal stuff. You take staples, not lives. You grab all the manila envelopes you can carry and you walk out with your head held high. I didn't need this job anyway. It's not setting a good example, even in schools. If I got to watch another story on CNN about high school kids killing other high school kids, I'm going to kill somebody. I wouldn't even want to be in school today because you got to be good at math. I sucked at math. But if you're in school today, well, you better be good at math because your life depends on getting the equation right. So little Johnny comes in the cafeteria with an AK-47 that holds 17 shots, and he's already squeezed off 6 rounds and injured 4 people, and I'm 15 feet from the exit door. How fast do I have to run before little Johnny picks me up and pumps up a couple shots in my direction? Why? Why would you do it? They're going to catch you. They'll get you. I watched the FBI case files. I watched the justice files. They're going to get you. No matter how brilliant your plan, they will get you. Things happen. You could be killing somebody in a pubic hair, could fall down your pant leg and land on a crime scene, and CSI will show up and find that rascal and track it right back to your genitalia. With the technology they have, you could fart at the crime scene. And if they get there soon enough and bag that rascal up and send it down to the FBI lab, and they take an air sample, they find out it's a Diet Coke, a cheeseburger, and a large fry from the hamburger shack down the street, and they go in, and they view the tape, and there's your dumbass eating a cheeseburger with a pubic hair hanging out your pants like, well, they got you. They got you.
But as an actor, you've done a lot of acting stuff. Sometime in the acting world, you have to do something that's lesser than your intelligence.
No, yeah. Well, no question about it. But it's another way to be creative. I mean, you figure out a way to like, you know, do it. I did this, believe it or not, like I did this Disney show. It was called Zeke and Luther, but I got to play Bobby Dicey, the world's greatest daredevil. And it's, but I was like an Evel Knievel character, and how fondness you have for Evel. But it was like, I'm like 33 pages, this thing. I'm getting ready to do this big thing, but it was a lot of fun to do that. I mean, it's like, you know, you were in like 33 pages, a 40 page script. So you're in there working 12 hours a day. And so it's kind of, it is an interest, another way to be creative, and it's another way to have fun. And you got to kind of embrace it. As long as you kind of, you know, did your due diligence on the stuff, then you just show up and kind of have fun with it, you know. But yeah, I like it. And it's also allowed me to get health insurance and also become a member of a pension fund with the Screen Actors Guild. So it's, even though you're doing stand-up, it gives you something that, you know, you got...
You're a great actor. I've seen stuff that you've done.
Oh, well, thank you, man. Yeah. Thanks.
And you're such a good defined character, too, you know, the...
Yeah, you would think someone would already have given me my own sitcom, Tommy.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, these jokes come out naturally. You don't need like a room full of, you know.
No, but you know, the thing is, it's like, you know, it's just, I've seen it change. Like, you know, where you know, where they were like handing out development deals to comedians at fucking LAX. You know, we're giving people, you know.
I had one.
Yeah. Me too. I know. I had a couple as well. You know, but it's like, but you know, it's a full career. I think there's a lot of ways to make a paycheck. And I think you have to examine all of them. I mean, there's guys I know that do stand-up that do nothing but voiceover stuff. And I put them in another tax bracket. There's other guys that write for television, and they make a great living doing that. But they used to be stand-ups. I mean, I think if you can do stand-up well, and you do stand-up on that level, it's kind of an ends to a means. It's not a means to an end, but there's a lot of other ways you can go. I mean, Mike Binder writes film and directs film.
He used to be a great comedian. I loved
him. Yeah. But, you know, but all these guys, I mean, you know, Craig T. Nelson and Tim Reed, the dude from WKRP, and says, now you realize that all these guys were stand-ups at one point that are now very successful actors. You know, I mean, Ray Romano, Kevin James.
Did you say the guy, what was that show, Coach? What was the...
Coach, that, Craig T. Nelson.
He was a stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
No way.
Yes, he was. Craig T. Nelson. He was just at the 40th anniversary of the Comedy Store.
No shit.
Yeah. But so, they wheeled Mitzi out, and God bless her, the poor thing.
And she's in a wheelchair now?
Well, no, she's just older. I mean, she doesn't have her faculty. I mean, I sat there and tried to talk to her, but she's not the Mitzi I remember, you know. But she's responsible for so many careers coming out of the Comedy Store. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, that for me, I mean, that's where I started. So that to me is always my alma mater. That's where I got good. That's where I worked the door. That's where I went up, you know, driving condition off stage on a motorcycle. That's where I had, like, you know, it was like comedy college, you know, but you're watching the best guys and trading punchlines with the best guys in the country. Right. So for me, and to watch, you know, Kinison and Robin Williams and Dice Clay and Damon Wayans and Jess Cesario and Gary Shandling, it was like a nightly thing, you know, so it was cool.
What is your best Sam Kinison story?
I would say driving him off stage on the motorcycle.
Off stage?
Yeah. It was, you know, I talked about this. It was
in the main room.
Yeah, in the main room. Drove him off stage on a motorcycle one. That was a Monday night. It was late. And a Thai bartender ran. I go, go now. You know, trying to close the joint down. And I just drove my bike out there. It's his last call. By the way, your ride's here. And I didn't fucking know what we were going to do. I had no idea. They just said it'd never been done before. So I just went in. And he jumped on the back. We drove off back and out on the sunset. And he had like a death grip on my rib cage. I mean, we could have been fucking killed. I just kind of pulled right out on the sunset. I looked a little bit, but then just gunned it.
Wow.
And then, and we turned around, and the audience came running out because they heard the bike go through the building. So they know I just literally drove him off stage on a bike and out the back. So a bunch of people ran out the front door, and we circled back around. And he got off the bike, and people were like, woo! And I didn't think nothing of it. I was like a nutty freaking kid, you know what I mean? And, you know, I didn't see him until like 2 weeks later, and I walk in the back, and he's standing with Lorraine Newman and Dennis Quaid from Saturday Night Live at the time. They were like, you know, and he was in that kind of era. And he goes, Jimmy Schubert, get over here, you crazy motherfucker. And, you know, he told the story, and I said, that was pretty cool. Yeah, I guess it was. But, you know, that's kind of a cool story. But there's a ton of them, man. You have to watch, you know, just the best comedians in the country. It was a real education. You can learn as much watching a bad comedian as you could a good comedian.
Oh, I agree.
About what not to do.
We love watching open mic nights. I mean, you know what not to do. You know, I mean,
when we were in Israel, they had an English speaking comedy night with the Israeli comedians. So they're up there trying to do comedy in their second language, which was nuts. So me and Butch and Dwight are in the back fucking screaming, The anus is a round hole, and then a gas comes out of it, and a liquid comes out of it, and a solid waste comes out of it.
Anyway, I was just fucking screaming. And I would realize how tough it would be to do comedy in your second language.
Maybe that's what Dez sounds like in Chinese.
But hey, let me say this about speaking of Dez and China, those guys, Turner and his buddy Andrew, really like first class. Those guys are. They're just their hospitality was super. I mean, you know, the hotels they put you up in, you know, the they just take care of you. You know, they make sure you know where you're going. You have everything written in Chinese. Andrew's fluent in Chinese. He like, you know, oh, he's fluent.
I can't wait.
Interesting, watch Chinese with an Australian accent. You know, he's
you know, Bing Ling Am, mate.
Bing Ling Am, I lovely, lovely, super dude. But the Mr. Softy guy is pretty good. But I mean, you know, they're it's interesting, you know, because I had an application that on my phone where you could say Ni Hao Ma, you know, so hey, how are you? And then he goes, and that's what Andy says. He goes, well, how would you know what they were saying back to you? I would go, nothing. I would just say. Very well, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I would just hit the next button on the speak Chinese thing, and a dude would say it in my earpiece, and I just repeat it. Ni hao ma. Yeah. You know, thank you. And you say, you know, you some fucking, you know, you walk around like I blend all of a sudden because I'm speaking the language. You know, and he goes, but how do you know what the fuck they're saying back to you? I go, I don't. He goes, so it's really just like speaking Chinese. You don't give a fuck what the other person's saying. You just fucking, you know. Anyway, it's tough, though. When you go to these cultures and you walk through these things, I don't know whether the guy's trying to fight me or he wants to sell me a pair of socks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know. It's you know, the guys that you went to the Carmel Shrook in Israel and the guy's yelling at you. Go, hey, man, what the fuck? He goes, relax, he's trying to sell you a pair of socks.
You think he's all pissed off? It's hilarious.
Like, well, you know.
When I went to Beijing years ago, people, it was before the Olympics, and people really were anxious to learn English. So it was common, and the John Moorhead, the guy that ran the gigs, said that this would happen. People came up to practice their English.
Yeah.
And people would walk up to you on the street in Beijing and go, hello, how are you today? And, you know, they just want to, I'm like, fine. And where are you from? And, you know, just real basic English trying to learn.
But they're trying to learn. They were practicing. You know what I got off? Here's the weird thing. Someone told me, because if you have red hair over in Asia, you know, you'll be like, you know, you'll be like, oh, they never see it. That's fucking bullshit. I didn't get any special treatment. I said, oh yeah, I got red hair. I'm in Asia. What could go wrong? I just said, no, you know, people just looking at you. I go,
you don't call the tornado blowjob special treatment.
you don't call that diplomacy.
You think they do that for everybody? I think that's a redheaded only thing.
No, for enough money you get anything in China, trust me. But no, it's I didn't get. I just thought, no, he goes, no, it's Japan specifically. I said, oh, so if I go to Japan, people look at me funny. He goes, probably not. They've seen enough foreigners. It's like, you know, you're just kidding. Like, you were over there before,
right.
where it was like a more innocent time. Hi, how are you? Lovely day today. Nice to meet you. And by the time I got there, they were like throwing out angry looks. So
they were done with it.
Yeah.
What has been your highest achievement as an actor?
That's a good point. My highest achievement, being able to make a living doing it for a number of years. I've had a great thing where it's like 50% stand up, 50% acting stuff, and you were able to kind of like have a nice little kind of balance on two things that you really kind of had a passion for. So being able to do that for a couple of years and still being able to, you know, I just went on an audition the other day. I got called in the morning and went in. I was for an Amish guy, so I thought it was a little outside my wheelhouse. But I'm not willing to get, you know, I'm willing to get up early and work on it. You know, you know, it's funny, like, you know, my trunk of my car looks like Beretta's car, you know, because he did so much undercover work. You know, you're out in the middle of the afternoon, you get a phone call. Hey, we need you to play this guy. You pop open your trunk, you get all these disguises. So you see, you go, it looks like Robert.
I'm dating myself with the Beretta reference. But you remember he had the trunk with the disguises in it? And, you know, you got to put on a mustache. All right, we're going.
That's right.
You know, so, but it's...
Don't do the crime if you can't do pay the time.
That's right.
Don't do it.
Don't. And he had a talking bird. It's the buried man. Yeah. It's the buried. You know, he had the bird on his shoulder. Hilarious.
What is...
That show would never get on television today.
No, by the way. What joke have you written that you're the most proud of?
Boy, that's a good question. That's a great question. I like... I like the chicken omelet, but the one I liked is, like, you know, that obesity has gotten so bad in America that 2 out of 3 people have now become 4 out of 5 people. And I said, and if you didn't get that, that's because 7/8 of people aren't really good with fractions. but that's the one I like.
It's mathematics. It's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a 2, 3, 4. Yeah, but it's like that. Yeah, it's a good. It's a well constructed. It's kind of funny and. You know, and then you got the, you know, like these, like a bit that I'm working on, is a triple Lindy bit. It's about why the NFL players have to wear pink for the month of October. And obviously, I know people say it's for breast cancer awareness. And I go, but how many women watch football? I mean, if the fan base is 10%, I'm being generous. Let's say it's 10%. I mean, that's the equivalent of me dressing a WNBA up in brown uniforms for a month so men become aware of colon cancer with 2 fuzzy pink testicles hanging off the jerseys so men can be aware of the fact that they get testicles. I mean, do you think you need, or do you think you need to make men aware of it? You think there has some man who hasn't been touched by it, hasn't lost a sister, a mom, an aunt, a grandma to breast cancer? You think you need to make us aware of this? I mean, this is why I watch football, to forget about that fucking shit, okay? Guy's got a touchdown, yeah! Breast cancer, shit! You've ruined it for me. You ruined it for me. And I just look. And if they gave more than 5% of the money they raised off that campaign, I wouldn't give a fuck if you dressed the NFL in pink for an entire season if all the money you raised went to finding a cure for the disease.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. But the problem is that the whole breast cancer awareness campaign has been kidnapped by the cosmetics industry. And because a lot of those chemicals women put on their bodies and their faces probably cause a lot of that. But we'll never know because we're not allowed to test on animals. Cut! Anyway, sorry. But anyway, that's another, you know, I don't know, like a couple.
That's a brilliant bit. You know, my sister died of breast cancer.
Yeah, but I'm
just, at the end, she would always say, fuck awareness. We need a cure.
Well, that's all
and
I'm
that
saying.
Was the awareness. What's a fucking ribbon? That she would get so, at the end of her her life, like that last year, she said, if I see anything pink, I'm going to fucking vomit. She's going through all this chemotherapy and shit, and just the whole awareness campaign started to anger her.
Yeah, well, I look, if you're right, look, you know how much...
So I think that's extra
brilliant. So I did fucking extra research, and I found out Susan G. Coleman only gives 13 fucking percent.
Right.
87% goes to administrative costs. Now, I'm not saying they don't do some good things, but Jesus, 13%?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Jimmy Valvano Foundation has a 5-star rating. You know how much goes to administrative costs? 11%. 11% goes to administrative. The rest goes to finding a cure. All I'm saying is don't fucking con me. I'm not a fucking asshole. Right. I'll fucking do a 20K on my fucking bad knee if it would find a fucking cure. And you see women out there all the time raising money for this. And the fact that the women sit on the panel and the board of directors, Susan G. Coleman, they care about as much about solving breast cancer as Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton care about racial harmony in the United States of America. Because without it, they don't, you know what I mean? Find a fucking cure. That's all I'm saying is my point of the thing. It's a con fucking job.
Totally.
You know? So if you're going to do the breast cancer awareness campaign, then give 100% of it to finding a cure.
Right.
Not 5 and act like you're doing a fucking...
87%? That's disgusting.
Well, I'm just telling you. Wow. You can do the research. It's
out
there.
Well, I'm glad. Because I told my sister was pissed off at the end to Susan G.
Yeah, find a cure. I mean, we live in this culture now. It's like, you know, you know, this is big business for these people. It's big business, and it's not. They're human fucking lives. But, you know, it's not that kind of thing. Like, we live in America, and we are, like, you know, I've been, you know...
Why are cons like this allowed in our country?
Yeah, everything's a fucking con, man. It's just, well, you never fucking know. If you're watching fucking news on this channel, it's got a slant on it this way. If you're watching shit this way, it's got a slant. Like, well, I'm too fucking stupid to make up my own fucking mind. And it just... Look, I know. People will get angry at me going, well, You don't know this? You don't
know
this?
Of course I know it, but I'm fucking stupid. It shouldn't be that way. I mean, shit, we live in a, you know, you're supposed to be America's the greatest country in the fucking world. You can put a man on the moon and, you know, you can do other things. I mean, how about we dedicate some of this to finding a cure for some of these things? It's ridiculous.
Right. And we ain't put a man on the moon in a long time.
Yeah.
And China's got a better space program than we do right now. So.
Yeah, but it's all our technology. They've they've completely lifted it. They actually have, it's so funny. They're actually taking the same flight path. Instead of a cut.
I love your anger at Susan G. Komen, and the joke's brilliant. Jimmy, I love you so much, bro, and you crack me up. You know, I don't spend enough time with you, man, because you make me laugh.
Well,
so
we could change it. I know, but you're out gallivanting the entire world. You really are. Like, people go, I go, Tom Rhodes is a citizen of the world. And you got friends everywhere.
Well, I'm proud of you for getting some stamps in your passport.
Yeah, dude, yeah. That's my new thing. Stamps in the passport. I want to get an extender. My passport looks like James Bond's passport.
Yeah.
I've been to Bahamas, Mexico, Canada.
I'm on my third passport. My second passport, I had to have extra pages put in it twice. Right. So when I got my new one, now it's 7 years old, but when I got it new, they automatically put extra ones in it. They already gave it to me thick.
Oh, they gave it to you thick? No.
Yeah.
Because they learned their lesson with you. 2-3 times, you're going to send you. I want to get to that point. You know, I got the visa from China in there now. It's kind of cool. Passport stamps.
You're the best, Jimmy. So in closing, do you have any words of wisdom or advice for the people of the world?
You know, love is just the greatest energy on the face of the planet. I think we should try to love each other more and not focus on what divides everybody. Focus on, look, every day is a gift. You know, the older I get, to realize, you know, every day is a gift. The shit people get hung up on. The shit people get hung up. I was just reading a story about this lesbian couple that got married, and a guy brought a gift to their thing, and it was like a gift basket. It was like a picnic basket, but it had all this stuff in it. And they put a little tube, a thing of fluff, a fluff-a-nutter, and some other stuff in there. It was like a handmade gift basket. And they went to the thing, and the guy's a co-worker of the woman. He goes to the party, and she said to him, fucking, hey, look, I can't eat most of the shit in your basket. You have a gift receipt? He was like, you know, I'm sorry, you can't eat the stuff in the basket. It was a gift. We made it with love. It was a thing, and I'm sorry that thing. And then you think it's done there, but the wife jumps on, and they start going back and forth about the fucking gift. He goes, hey, I gave you a fucking gift. What the fuck do you want? I'm not supposed to finance your fucking life. Most people give money. I mean, it was fucking unbelievable. So that kind of shit, the people get hung up over a fucking wedding gift. Not the fact that the guy brought one or they took the time to put a little gift basket together. But, you know, people respond like that. Well, I think that seems like a more prevalent kind of behavior in our society now than more than it's ever been.
There is an epidemic of assholishness.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, my message to the people would be stop being a fucking asshole and enjoy your life a little bit and fucking breathe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just look, you're there's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. God doesn't make junk. Okay? Hate to sound like a bumper sticker, but that's the way it is. All right? Listen, you may be a little fucking special, but I don't mean to run through your bubble garden with a pin, but look, we all have our superpowers. That's all I'm saying. Okay. That's it. That's what I would say to the people.
I love you, Jim.
I love you too, brother.
Long may you run, brother.
You too, man.
Long may you run.
That's right.
You're listening to Tom Rhodes Radio.
Karate Kick, baby.
Rock and roll.
Hey, if you like my podcast and you want to show your support, please go to Amazon or iTunes and buy my live comedy recordings. And come see me live when I perform in your city. Shalom, amigo.